Five times in the writings of the Hebrew prophets, the Messiah is referred to as the Tzemach. The King James translators rendered the word Tzemach into English as branch, often in all capital letters. Both they and the Jewish sages recognized the messianic reference in each case where the prophets of Israel used the word Tzemach. Each of the five usages of Tzemach describes a mission or prophetic role that the Messiah must fulfill. Each of the five occurrences of Tzemach details a particular quality or perspective of the life and ministry of the Messiah. The fulfillment of each of these five characteristics is detailed in the five gospel accounts, just as was foretold by the prophets. This is the greatest story never told. It's all about Yeshua, the prophet, the promised Messiah. Join me here in the land of Israel as we take a chronological and archaeological journey through the Gospels. You have never seen anything like this before. I'm Michael Rood. Prepare for a Rood awakening. Many years ago, the rabbis in Jerusalem presented a public challenge in which they offered a $10,000 reward for any Christian who could answer 10 questions concerning contradictions in the Christian Bible. The questions were framed by Jewish lawyers, rabbis who had no intention of giving away $10,000. It took me 1 week to answer 9 of those questions, but it took 17 years before I could answer the 10th. One of those questions concerns Matthew 2:23. And he, Jesus, came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets. He shall be called a Nazarene. As hard as one may try, no one will ever find a reference in the prophets where either the prophet, the Messiah, or anyone is to be called a Nazarene. Most people assume that Jesus being called a Nazarene must refer to a Nazarite vow, which restricts one from eating or drinking anything that contains the fruit of the vine. No grapes, no wine, no raisins. Yeshua admittedly broke the strictures of that vow on numerous occasions. He was accused of being a wine bibber because he ate and drank with publicans and sinners. Under a Nazarite vow, one is not allowed to cut their hair until the conclusion of the vow, at which time he shaves off all of his hair and burns it in a fire. Yeshua never did this either. The fact is, nowhere in the writings of the prophets is it indicated that the Messiah would be obligated to a Nazarite vow. The Hebrew originals do not leave us with contradictions, but lead us into truths far deeper than the English language can reach. Genesis 1:14, we read that the Creator put the sun, the moon, and the stars in their courses and said, "Let them be for signs and for seasons, for days and for years." A cycle of 7 days makes a Shavua, a seven, a week. Genesis records that the Creator worked for 6 days and rested on the seventh. And at Mount Sinai, he instructed his people to follow his example. French atheists attempted to institute a 10-day week. The Babylonians and later the Romans attempted to sanctify the first day as the day of the sun. The Muslims solemnized the 6th day. Yet the 7-day week and the 7th day Sabbath have remained an undeniable part of human culture for thousands of years. Only on the pagan English calendar has the Sabbath been renamed Saturn's Day. In every other language, it remains a Sabbath, the day the Creator rested. after the days and weeks, which are governed by the Earth's relationship to the sun, the moon cycle marks the passage of months. Moon and month are the same root in English, just as Chodesh is the same word for both new moon and month in Hebrew. Until the advent of the Babylonian sun calendar, months were numbered and based on the lunar cycle, which is roughly 29.530587 days. The month begins on the evening the new moon is sighted just after sunset. It is called the new, or more precisely, the renewed moon, as the light is renewed on the face of the moon after a period of darkness. From that new moon, it will be either 29 days or 30 days before the next new moon is sighted. If, for any reason, the moon is not sighted at the end of the 29th day, in the Hebrew culture, it is declared to be a 30-day or a complete month. The modern term new moon is the astronomical moment of conjunction that cannot be observed, only calculated. This is the basis of the modern Jewish calendar since 359 of the Common Era. At the end of the 12th month of the Hebrew calendar, around early spring, we were instructed to inspect the barley in the land of Israel to determine if it had reached the stage of Aviv, an ancient Hebrew agricultural term that is consistently mistranslated in English Bibles. When barley reaches the stage of Aviv, it is harvestable by hand and sickle. When the barley is Aviv, the following new moon is called the moon or the month of the Aviv, the first month of the year, the month we celebrate Passover and the Feast of Matzah, or Unleavened Bread. During the seven-day Feast of Unleavened Bread, we present the first fruits of the barley as an offering in the temple, Aviv parched in fire. Only after this offering is made may we eat of the new barley of the land, hence the month of the Aviv. The King James translators improperly capitalized the Hebrew adjective Aviv, removed the direct object the, and made it the name of a month, Abib. Yet they never capitalized the proper nouns, Sabbath, Passover, or any of the feast of the Lord. The accuracy with which God's laws maintain the celestial time clock has only been recently appreciated. In the decades that followed astronauts putting mirrors on the moon, both NASA and amateur astronomers have reflected laser beams off these mirrors to precisely calculate the lunation period. The lunar cycle, by which all of the feasts of the Lord have been kept since Mount Sinai, can now be reverse calculated with precision. The chronological gospels could not have been done without these reverse calculations. We can now accurately pinpoint every Sabbath and feast day in Yeshua's ministry. We know the day he healed the blind on the Sabbath that began Hanukkah. We know the day of his crucifixion and his resurrection 3 days and three nights later. We now know the signs in the heavens that the Chaldean astronomers recognized as a sign of the birth of the King of Israel.
From the cunning strategy planned against the Almighty's people to the impossibility of their escape and the miracle of their faith-driven victory, this is the incredible story of Hanukkah.
They want to destroy us and to destroy our wives and to kill our children and to take everything that we've got. But we're fighting for our lives and we're fighting for the Torah.
Hanukkah, Shining the Light in Darkness, is an all-new teaching from Michael Rood. But the only way you can get it is with your love gift donation in January. Own this teaching now when you give a love gift donation of $50 or more. Or give $100 or more to get this new teaching plus a pair of solid olive wood candlesticks, elegantly handcrafted in Israel and polished to perfection.
The victory of the battle doesn't stand in the multitude of the army. but it comes from strength from heaven.
Hurry, this offer is only available in January. Make your love gift donation now, online or by phone.
Five times in the writings of the Hebrew prophets, the Messiah is referred to as the Tzemach. The King James translators rendered the word Tzemach into English as branch, most often in all capital letters. Both they and the Jewish sages recognized the messianic reference in each case where the prophets of Israel used the word Tzemach. Each of the five usages of Tzemach describes a specific mission or prophetic role that the Messiah must fulfill. Each of the five occurrences of Tzemach details a particular quality or perspective of the life and ministry of the Messiah. The fulfillment of each of these five characteristics is detailed in the five gospel accounts, just as it was foretold by the prophets. That is why we have five gospels. Yes, five gospels. The first four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, detail the fulfillment of each of the facets of Messiah's ministry as the suffering servant, a scarlet thread that runs through the Torah, the prophets, and the writings. This is the prophetic shadow picture of Messiah that is embedded in the spring feast of the Lord, Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Day of First Fruits, and the Feast of Shavuot, Pentecost. It was the prophet, King David, who wrote these prophetic shadow pictures into the temple liturgy as the Psalms, or prophetic songs. Peter, on the day of Pentecost, declared that David was a prophet who saw beforehand the coming of the Messiah. David choreographed the temple service to be a reflection, or as Paul put it, a shadow picture of good things to come. A rehearsal of that which the Messiah would literally fulfill as the Lamb of God who takes upon himself the sin of the world. The fifth gospel, the revelation of Yeshua Messiah, details the future fulfillment of the fall feast of the Lord, the Day of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, the Feast of Tabernacles, and the Last Great Day, which sets the stage for the Messiah to rule as the righteous judge and conquering king. Yes, the book of the Revelation is the fifth gospel. Good news for those who love the appearing of our Messiah, bad news for the tyrannical rulers of the world, as well as the pew warmers who live as though these scriptures are just a fairy tale. One of the most profound prophecies Yeshua fulfilled, indicating both his Davidic genealogy and his kingly role, is found in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, verse 23. And he, Yeshua, came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets. He shall be called a Nazarene. This verse is not a problem. It is the answer for Jew and Gentile alike, but we must dig past the English translation to find the $10,000 answer. Several prophets declared that the Messiah would be a Tzemach, a branch, but Isaiah prophesied that the Tzemach would be a particular type of branch. Isaiah 11:1. There shall come forth a rod, a hoter, a living shoot out of the stem, the gazah, the cut down tree stump of Jesse, who is the father of King David, and a branch, a netzer, a specific type of branch, shall grow out of his, out of Jesse's roots, out of his shoreshim. And in that day there shall be a root, a shoresh, out of Jesse, which shall stand as an ensign, a banner to the people. To the root shall the Gentiles seek, and his, the netzer's rest, shall be glorious. Isaiah added prophetic detail to the picture of the Messiah as the Tzemach, the branch. He prophesied that the Tzemach would be a very particular type of branch, a netzer. The science of horticulture distinguishes many types of branches or offshoots from a tree, which are designated by various Latin and English terms. The same is true in the Hebrew language. The word netzer indicates a shoot from an olive tree that grows out of the original root system, but springs up at a later time and somewhat distant from the original trunk. The tree may have already been cut down because of its inability to bear fruit. The branch that shoots forth out of the root of that stump of the family tree of Jesse, King David's father, will spring forth as a netzer. A netzer has absolutely nothing to do with a Nazirite vow. The Hebrew words nazir and netzer are unrelated. They just appear similar in English. The prophets tell us that the Messiah, the son of David, will be a tzemach, a branch out of the trunk of David. But Isaiah tells us that the tzemach, the messianic branch, will be a netzer. The village of Netzarit in northern Israel, known in English as Nazareth, takes its name from the root word netzer. Descendants of King David originally established this village. Miriam, Mary, the daughter of Yosef ben Yaakov, of the bloodline of King David through his son Solomon, and Miriam's husband, Yosef ben Eli, of the bloodline of King David through another son, Nathan, both grew up in Netzarit among near and distant relatives and a few Levites. The inhabitants of Netzarit most likely settled in this area during the Greek occupation of Israel, when many Judeans fled into the Galilee region to escape persecution during the bloody reign of Antiochus Epiphanes. The residents of Netzarit knew their family history and named their village in recognition of the fact that there were a shoot out of the root of the tree of Jesse, springing up at a distant place and at a later time. A village of Netzarim, the Hebrew plural of Netzer. Now it makes perfect sense for these Netzarim to travel back to their ancestral home of Beit Lechem, Bethlehem, to legally register their support for naming Octavius Augustus the father of the Roman Empire in the 25th year of his reign as Caesar, the very year of Yeshua's birth. Not one gospel writer tells the complete story of the life and ministry of the Messiah. None of them were attempting to tell the entire story. John admits that if the whole of the story were ever written, the world could not contain the scroll. But these things are written that we might assuredly know that Yeshua of Netzarit is the prophet of whom Moses spoke and the Messiah of whom the prophets prophesied. It is only by putting the prophets and the gospels together that we see Yeshua as the Tzemach, the Netzer, the Messiah, the King, the Servant, the Son of Man, the only begotten Son of God, and the Almighty Judge.
The lives of Israeli victims hang critically in the balance following events of terror, violence, and war. But there's another painful problem: men, women, and children living in poverty. And you can be there for them. Visit us online at thelydiaproject.com. You'll find personal stories from the people who need you and the information you need to make a difference in their lives. When you give to the Lydia Project, you enable us to send help. Emotional and spiritual encouragement are especially needed during these critical days of recovery. Your support enables our ground team in the land of Israel to function as Yehovah intended, providing for the wounded soldiers, widows, orphans, and the poor. Help Israel. Give to the Lydia Project.
The five Gospels detail the fivefold ministry of Messiah as the Netzer and Tzemach, the branch. The Gospel of Matthew introduces the Messiah as the King from heaven as he lays down the rules of the kingdom over which he will reign forever. Matthew begins his record by establishing Yeshua's lineage from King David through his only earthly parent, Miriam, the daughter of Yosef ben Yaakov, direct descendants of King David through Solomon. The record of the Babylonian astronomers delivering a royal treasure to the home of the young king sets the stage. Jeremiah prophesied that the Messiah, the Tzemach, would be a king out of the lineage of David. I will raise unto David a righteous Tzemach, a righteous branch. A king shall reign and prosper, and he shall execute judgment and justice in the earth. The Gospel of Mark introduces the Messiah as a servant. No lineage, no fanfare. He is just doing the mission that he was sent to accomplish. Immediately, straightway, forthwith. These are the words Mark chooses to typify Yeshua's actions. He has exactly 70 weeks, 490 days to complete his mission. Zechariah prophesied that the Messiah, the Tzemach, would be the servant of the Most High. Behold, I will bring forth my servant, Tzemach, the branch. The Gospel of Luke introduces the Messiah as our example, the Son of Man, who demonstrates how to live the rules of the kingdom. Follow me, do what I do, teach what I teach. Luke's record begins by establishing that both Zechariah and Elisheva were blameless before the Almighty in their compliance with all the commandments in the Torah, including the additional statutes applicable only to the Aaronic priesthood. Yeshua's supposed lineage through Miriam's husband, his stepfather, Yosef ben Eli, a direct descendant of King David through Nathan, denotes the shadow of illegitimacy under which the Messiah lived. It was supposed that he was the child of Yosef, conceived out of wedlock. Zechariah prophesied that the Messiah, the Tzemach, would be not only a man, he would be the man. Behold, the man whose name is Tzemach, the branch. He shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. The Gospel of John introduces the Messiah as the incarnation of the eternal Word, which became flesh and tabernacled among us, as the prophet of whom Moses prophesied. John introduces Yeshua with the testimony of Yohanan ben Zechariah, who declared to an entourage of Levites and Kohanim that he immersed Yeshua and saw the divine sign that had been revealed to him by the Spirit. The following day, when he saw Yeshua returning from the wilderness, Yohanan did not herald him as the Son of God, as the voice from heaven proclaimed, but he announced him as the Lamb of God, the sacrifice without blemish who would atone for the sins of the world. Isaiah prophesied that the Messiah, the Tzemach, would be the one who would purge the blood and wash away the filth of his people by the blood of the innocent Lamb, the sinless Son of the Most High. In that day, Tzemach, the branch of the Lord, will be beautiful and glorious. The Lord shall wash away the filth of the daughters of Zion and shall purge the blood from the midst of Jerusalem. The Acts of the Apostles record the fulfillment of the 70-week ministry of Messiah as Yeshua baptizes his followers with the Holy Spirit at the Feast of Shavuot, in Greek, Pentecost. In the Acts, Luke shows us the struggles that take place as the followers of Yeshua learn to walk by the Spirit the hard way. We see demonic possession, disobedience, deception, and death. But we also witness miracles, deliverance, and victory. This is what life looks like with the Spirit of the resurrected Messiah dwelling in believers. Luke's work is finished, But the book of Acts is still being written today by heavenly scribes. The Gospel of the Revelation, the fifth gospel, is written in precise chronological sequence with several parenthetical sections illustrating cause and effect. The Revelation chronology begins with seven letters to the seven assemblies in Asia Minor. John then details the events that transpire as Yeshua strips seven seals from the scroll, and specific events play out across the stage of planet Earth. When the seventh seal is stripped, seven angels blowing seven trumpets are introduced. Six angels blow their trumpets, and then seven thunders follow. When the seven thunders are accomplished, the seventh and last trumpet finally sounds on the Feast of Trumpets, or Yom Teruah. And the saints are miraculously saved from the wrath to come and are gathered to the sea of fire and glass. Seven angels then pour out the contents of seven bowls full of the smoking wrath of the Almighty onto the earth. When the wrath is concluded on Yom Kippur, the bride dresses for the marriage supper of the Lamb and the seven-day wedding feast, Sukkot. At the conclusion, Yeshua returns to earth on Hoshanah Rabbah, the last great day, to rule with the Torah and a rod of iron. Jeremiah prophesied that the Messiah, the Tzemach, would be the judge out of the lineage of David and would execute judgment and pure righteousness throughout the earth. I will cause Tzemach, the branch of righteousness, to shoot forth from David, and he shall execute judgment and righteousness in all the earth. The gospel record closes with the revelation of Yeshua Messiah, which reveals how the Messiah will fulfill the fall feast of the Lord. At the end of this journey through the chronological gospels, we will understand why we were commanded to keep the feast of the Lord forever. They are the prophetic shadow pictures of good things to come. Come, enjoy the feast.